Before we start the show, we'd like to let you know that our Patreon page and the bonus patron-only episodes are now going live every Friday. You can access this weekly extra content for less than the price of a coffee per month. Head over to Patreon.
Say it like you mean it, Gem.
Head over to patreon.com/3inthepink to watch our campaign launch video and choose a support tier that suits you. This is 3 in the Pink. In the Pink. I'm Gemma Hatherill.
I'm Apsy. You already know. Witana.
You already know.
I'm Roma. Book.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
I've forgotten to fill in the show notes, but this week we're going to talk about the...
Repeal the 8th.
Repeal the 8th. The aftermath. Big ups, Ireland. You did the damn thing.
Fucking yes. Literally, they voted yes.
Literally, yes.
69. It was looking like yesterday was going to be the day of 69 because Jeremy Corbyn turned 69 yesterday.
Nice!
And there was a few exit polls saying that the yes vote was at 69% and it was thrilling.
Nice, but also not nice because as we all know, 69 sucks.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
You're neither here nor there while simultaneously being both here and there. As I like to say.
The act itself is always a letdown, but the number, whenever it crops up...
It's always noise!
Noise!
Noise! That is when I want to die. When
you're 69.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm not getting that far, actually. Sorry, go on.
No, it's fine. We're also going to talk about the Grenfell Inquiry, which has started in the last week. We're only, a week into it, and it's potentially going to go on for a few months, but we're going to talk about that as it's begun. In our Patreon-only bonus show, we're going to be
bants.
Giving you just straight bants, to be
just
honest.
Just fucking bants, man.
Just like...
Just sometimes you just need a bit of bants.
Straight in the old... Straight in the veins. Just bants.
My brother calls
need that pure shit.
Draining the main vein. Mm. Drain the main vein.
Mm. But we're filling the main vein with bants.
Your dick isn't the vein, though, is it? Imagine if that was wrong. The main vein.
Jesus.
Be easier to kill a man, wouldn't it?
Be evolutionarily poor decision though, because it just hangs there.
I mean, they do vulnerable. Already just have their entire life-giving part of them just dangling around, like
external. It's almost vulnerable.
They didn't evolve very well, did men? Did they?
You have to. If someone's on your bed, if a dude is say in your bed,
even evolutionarily, men are stupid.
Gemma, we love men on this show. Who's your favourite man?
All of them. It's difficult to decide. It's which is my favourite flavour.
Which is my favourite flavour of ice cream? I love all ice cream.
That's not true, because I only like three or four, because I'm picky. So I actually would only eat...
Three men.
Who's my favourite man? I'm actually thinking about that.
JC, probably, as in Jesus Christ.
JC.
Oh, yeah.
The Lord.
The Lord.
Our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ.
My favourite three men are the Son,
the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Name the top three men in your life.
The Holy Spirit is actually gender neutral, so that's the hate crime.
It's my turf fringe.
You just misgendered the Holy Spirit.
Father, son, and they. They, them.
My favourite man is Tony Soprano.
Yes.
He's also dead.
He's the Holy Spirit.
We don't know if he's dead, the character, because... It was
but the man's dead and the character, Pob's dead.
James? Yes, R.I.P.
Gabagool.
What's the gabagool?
Gabagool.
Have we figured out what gabagool is yet?
Yeah, it's like a type of meat.
Oh, it's meat. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense, because the pork store.
Yep.
Yes, yes.
Anyway... Anyway, what I guess we'll, this is going to be a silly show, I can tell.
So yeah, big ups to Ireland.
Big up to fucking Ireland. I cried. I'm just going to put it out there right now at the top of the show.
My medicine doesn't let me cry, but if I could, I would have.
I
need
happy medicine
tears. To stop me crying so much, probably. I'm just joking. But I did cry.
It was just that it was a motherfucking landslide. The land slid.
Yeah.
The land did slide, but it's it's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've all seen it and we've been like, is that land going to slide?
Yeah. Of landslide
is that land going to slide? No, I don't think that land's going to slide.
Are those tectonic plates too solid?
Yeah.
It could slide, but it could also not slide. Mm. But it did slide.
Yeah.
Land.
It slid. for the
I was ready to be disappointed.
Yeah, I was. I have definitely got referendum fatigue. Only, and I was like fully
that,
ready. Yeah.
Well, there's one thing that Irish people that I know are sort of articulating this irritation with people comparing it to Brexit and Trump because it's kind of its own thing. Ireland has a lot of referendums because it's the only way they can change their constitution.
I'm not comparing it, but I do have referendum fatigue.
Not you, but it's just reminded me that an offshoot of this is some of the response from England's perspective is fucking shit. They're saying like, oh, this is Ireland extending like an olive branch to the UK. And
this is Ireland extending an olive branch to women.
It's like in the era of Brexit, it's Ireland proving itself to be socially cohesive with the rest of the UK and how
England
it wants
really
to be let back into
think
the fold.
Too highly of itself.
It really does.
Doesn't it?
Fucking self-centered as shit.
Nobody gives a fuck about you, England. Actually, everyone hates you and they all talk about you behind your back. So suck a dick.
We're writing, you know, England's name in the fucking burn book because it is a fugly slut.
You are.
England, you are a fugly slut.
Fugly.
I mean, quite literally, though. Not the
England once made out with a hot dog.
The one thing that I was trawling through Twitter and
surfing
I was trying to I was surfing the net
surfing the world wide web
I was clicking through all the e-tweets
and hyperlinks
and I was looking at that
on
the
AOL
hashtag.
AOL page.
And I was looking at the Save the Eighth hashtag because I was trying to find some bitter tweeters, but there weren't that many.
Just
they
literally trying
to
find them for fun.
They didn't really have shit to say. But
I mean,
their
point is like they all do believe that like babies are alive, but it's like just.
What?
I heard one quote on I can't remember what podcast it was, maybe NPR, and there was a woman who was like. On the street in Ireland, and she was like, oh, you're pregnant, you know what the gender of the baby is, that could be a girl, and that's where feminism starts.
Oh yeah, some of the
feminism starts in the womb.
Like,
you're already
like,
oppressed
in
the womb.
It's like I'm voting for women, unborn women.
I know.
But like the one thing that
unborn women are our future.
Yeah. I believe you should only abort men. You should only
just
have abortions if it's a dude.
Do like a reverse.
You don't know what the gender is of that baby. That could be a man. Maybe you should abort.
Yeah,
but that could be a girl.
The
and
one,
that's where feminism
the one thing
starts.
That I did
what is
like
kind of a
the one point that I think was important in the discussions
there
around
was only
it,
one
was that there were some pro-choice people who were. Kept making this point where they were saying just because I'm voting yes doesn't mean I like abortions or I think that abortions
I love
but
them.
The thing
yeah,
is no but the thing is that they, but the thing is that some people were countering in that and saying like actually I think it's really important for us to say abortions are fucking great and like we shouldn't be I understand what people who are saying abortions
in like practical terms, it's like when you say like the argument about like young women being put on contraceptive pill or whatever. It's like there's more reasons for it than just contraception.
Yeah.
And people are kind of using that same discourse.
I understand what people are saying when they say you can be anti-abortions but still vote yes. I do understand that, but at the same time, I think that it's important for people to say that it's that we are. That abortions are actually great and they should be, they're valued and they, that shame around it. There's still that, it shouldn't be that's, it's important that stigma is.
You
is
get
lost.
An abortion and you get an abortion and you get an abortion.
Conversely, it's kind of like decriminalizing sex work where you don't have to like it,
true.
But you should have,
you
should
do have to lump it.
You should lump it into. Safe policy for people
harm
who are
reduction.
Doing it. So you shouldn't have to love abortion.
No,
although
not.
I obviously, you know,
I agree. But I do think that we should also do our best to reshift the how we frame abortion and how we think about it. And there is still a lot of stigma surrounding
especially in
Ireland. Like it's thought of as a really shameful thing of having to leave the country to do that.
The ways in which you're allowed to have an abortion, which you're previously allowed to have an abortion in Ireland, were just so absurd. Like I heard of a case where like a woman had sepsis, and they had to keep
severe,
checking the
severe,
had to keep checking the that there was a heartbeat in the baby. And apparently it's like, even if you know that, okay, if this keeps going on, this person's going to bleed out and die, you can't step in until they literally are dying. Even though you know that you have to wait until they're so far gone that they're nearly they might actually die,
and you have to get before eight you can doctors do it. To assess to agree you that. And agree you can that, yeah. There's a few amendments that were sort of partially put into the constitution. I think it was in 2012 when there was a case of a 14-year-old girl who was raped, and she wasn't allowed an abortion, but the Supreme Court ruled that she was at risk of suicide. And so there was an amendment put in that if that suicide was added or as a contentious issue, because if you could prove, again, difficult to prove, but if you could prove that you would be suicidal if you had the baby, then you may be able to be granted one. But I mean, this on a wider level, like when we saw the result, I just was like, it suddenly felt like this big moment of like people giving a shit about. I'd been reading about women without sounding too cheesy about it. Like it just felt like you could say that it's been a long time coming, and it's the right. It would have felt a bit unusual for a country to vote for something that regressive in this day and age. But having said that, like you said,
you
like, things aren't going well lately. And
it was really moving to see the fact that people travelled from across the world.
People going to the home to vote hashtag if you want to cry.
Yeah, and people offering to fund people's travel who weren't able to afford.
Yeah, there was loads of people crowdfunding or offering lifts to and from the airport or doing like really a real movement across. I'm always very suspicious of like bipartisan movements. But
there's a huge amount of Irish people living like around the world. Yeah. So like there's a lot of people that are able to come.
Yeah, my mate flew from Australia. Couldn't get back to Australia. Shout outs to you, Ximena, who can't get back to Australia for a few days because of visa issues. But
there's a few people who are getting stuck traveling like all day to go and vote in something. I mean, it's not nothing, and it really was a mobilization of different generations of I was sent an article in the Irish Times which was debunking a few of the myths that the media was pushing forward before the vote. One of them was this kind of intergenerational conflict being a thing, and how that actually wasn't true.
No.
The movement was younger feminists pushing for this outdated law, and older feminists who have been spent their whole life being with their
cross-demographical.
Kind of, and it said, you know, the thesis of the article was that this should once and for all like debunk this idea of Ireland as this regressive conservative country. That Ireland is actually for the most part progressive and representative of most European values and things, and this was sort of conclusive proof of that, because even people who every single parliamentary constituency in Ireland voted for yes, except for Donegal.
But Ireland is still very much like rooted in religion.
It is, and more so, obviously, than other countries. But I guess I don't know myself, but the few things I was reading was saying, obviously, it's got its issues with religion, but it is moving forward, and it isn't.
There was a lot of discussion, well, a fair bit of discussion about the Catholic Church and its reputation now after the child sex abuse scandals as well, and whether that had an influence on people's vote. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but probably was in the back of people's minds as well. There were people that have left the church because of that.
Yeah, well, I was at home over the weekend and chatting to my dad about it, who notoriously has dreadful opinions.
Shout out,
what's his name? Mark.
Mark.
They're all called things.
He doesn't know that I have a podcast. But he actually made an interesting point, which was, so when I was born in Galway.
My Galway girl.
She's just waiting for someone to
do it. Apparently, like the hospitals and stuff are like literally teeming with nuns, and like hospitals are really closely connected with religion for some reason. So like loads of the nurses and shit are like nuns, blah blah blah. And so my dad's point was that
two kinks in one. hello, nurse. None.
Are there still going to be people that are going to try and enact their like religious preferences over people in like a healthcare context. Mm. And then I was like, well, at least that now would be illegal if they did try and do that. But I don't doubt that there will be people that still try and, you know, either talk people out of it or try and, you know, pressure yeah. people in some way. Because if they are so like pervasively in the healthcare system, then that is still possible. But I guess that's something that we're just going to have to wait and see. Between
like the religiosity of medicine and how it's practiced, yeah. and then this specific issue, which I think had become so extreme,
yeah,
like that. Even religious people, even older people, could in their droves yeah. vote for yeah. it to be because it wasn't just.
I mean, my mum thought I was going to get stolen by nuns, so this is you have to take this opinion with pinch of salt. But she was convinced I was going to get stolen by nuns.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the referendum was about whether or not what about the role that wider Catholicism should have in Ireland. It was about a specific issue, and it was, I guess, one of the positives of the Yes campaign is that they specified the kind of medical necessity of it. And yeah. They kind of, there was, there
they
seemed
got
to be,
around that.
Yeah, they were trying way, to be yeah. like, this isn't, yeah, trying to move the discourse away from the staunch religious yeah. stuff and not have the ethical argument of when does life begin or whatever. Yeah, yeah, just yeah. really root it in medical necessity
yeah, and, yeah.
And bodily autonomy and facts.
Yeah.
And the Civita case.
Yeah.
Tragic yeah. though it is, like it's yeah. very difficult to read about it, but it has been respected by the Yes campaign movement yeah. and has become.
People were chanting her name.
Yeah, they were, and it was really. Sorry. I kept crying at all the videos because they're just. There's something. I think it's just like things going well, people mobilising yeah. for something
yeah.
positive, and I guess it's. In hindsight.
Kieran Yates tweeted about how nice it was to see
yeah,
a bunch of women chanting an Indian woman's name.
Yeah, and not. Because obviously they're. Were white women, but yeah. it was really respectful. Her and her dad has been came out a few days before the vote saying
that he was
giving
glad,
his consent
yeah.
for mm. her face yeah. and name to be used for the Yes campaign because there were people on the No campaign. I mean, you know, last week we had some comments. it was, you know, mentioned that we were like, you know, not being fair to both sides or whatever. Yeah. But I think that this should be... The issues like this are ethical and they should yeah. be a fight. And maybe it's okay yeah. to say that the No campaign were being yeah. fighting
really
dirty.
There isn't always
dirty.
Two sides to an argument.
I mean, there
when it's
is, but one of them can be more ethically...
yeah.
yeah, I mean, there literally
righteous.
Can be.
Yeah.
Like, but... it doesn't necessarily have any merit.
Yeah, like, of course you should figure out what your enemy is thinking. You should understand their ideas and things, but
yeah.
also you can have a position, and there's no mm. inherent virtue in impartiality. There
yeah.
is just a kind of... They're in situations, especially things like this, where, of course, the clashes are primarily kind of ethical ones, and
yeah.
you can fall on that line where you will. But this was about. This wasn't even really about at some. On some levels, this wasn't just about the ethics of abortion. It was about what pain and trauma are you willing to put women through for the
yeah.
sake of some abstract ideal?
Yeah. yeah,
that's what it kind of came down to. And in those terms, in terms of preventing female suffering, then it is fair to be
yeah.
lean towards the yes side
yeah.
in a
yeah.
public podcast
yeah.
and say,
I mean,
do you know what, this is actually fucking
yeah.
you should vote yes, and if
yeah.
you don't, then I'll judge you.
Yeah, it does feel like a victory for women.
It did. That's
and that's something that's so rare. And, you know I said I've had referendum fatigue, and I know that these things are all very separate, like the independence referendum and Brexit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, like, feeling those kind of, like, huge emotional defeats, especially, like, Scottish independence, and feeling those kind of huge political divides, but then this is so tied with, like, my specific identity
yeah.
that, you know, I feel, like, a bit of personal pride.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
this has gone through.
We've taken a bunch of hits lately.
Yeah.
Women, or, like, whoever.
For the last 100 years or so, my
yeah,
Riley.
Whoever's decided that they have a whim that they are a woman.
Yeah.
You know, but who are you, or, like, women.
Turf corner over here.
Yeah, that's you guys. But, like, women as a, you know, we do live. Without getting, you know, histrionic, we are currently living in a very like turbulent.
Do you get histrionic?
Time. Well, you know,
get hysterical if you want, to, Gurney. Hysteria. The word hysteria comes from the word for womb.
Did it?
Oh, we should have called the podcast that.
Yes.
Three in the hysteria.
We should have called it hysterical something. Hysteric web.
Yeah, well, it's too late now.
Yes.
Three of the pink is. I could never tell my mum that we've got a podcast.
Every guy that I tell the name of is just like, what?
Scandalised,
yeah,
aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, bitch.
For real.
I said it.
I said it. I said it, but don't do it.
That's
right. I said it, but hold on. Attendez la crème. Support for Three in the Pink comes from listeners like AU by way of Patreon. Your Patreon patronage for as little as $1 per month helps to keep the show going and provide an alternative, accessible voice in leftist political and cultural discussion.
You said it.
I did. If you'd like to sign up and show your support, as well as receive all of our exclusive Patreon content,
you want it all,
including an entire extra weekly podcast. That's some fat content, PH fat. Head over to patreon.com/threeinthepink. That's three in the word. No.
Three the word.
Three in the word. Yeah. Three word in the pink.
Also fat, F-A-T, don't fat shame.
Yeah.
Right, let's talk about the next thing that we're going to talk about. It's the Grenfell Inquiry, which started last week. It's going to be long. It's going to be a long thing.
If you haven't already, you should check out the Grenfell Inquiry podcast with Eddie Mair.
The BBC one.
Keep the Kleenex on hand.
Yeah, it's a tough listen.
It is fucking wrenching.
Yeah, I was listening to it in work the other day, having a little moment, obviously. Yeah. I'm full of antidepressants, so I can't cry, but if I could, I would have. Trust me. Yeah, it's pretty disturbing. I mean, at the minute, so the first 9 days have been set aside for commemorations. Whether or not they use that 9 days entirely for commemorations kind of depends on how long people decide to take. But you will notice if you do listen to that podcast, you know, the commemorations are not done in any sort of order. Like, you will have people going back, talking about people that you've already heard about from different kind of perspectives. It's pretty distressing. There's talk of, obviously, there was the stillborn baby. It's very, very sad.
The gay Afghan couple.
It's very distressing.
When they were talking about the stillborn baby, and that family was saying that they couldn't get the smell out of their daughter's hair, the smell of smoke, which is just really fucking disturbing. Yeah.
But it's also... Without being gratuitous, it's important to humanise the people in the part of the...
I mean, this is only of the 71 people confirmed, well, 72 people total now that have been confirmed died in the fire. You have to consider also that there are still hundreds of people who are apparently missing, but are almost definitely dead. We're looking at a year later.
Mm.
Those people either have been injured and are illegal and not wanting to come forward and go and get help. They would be seriously injured and possibly die because of smoke inhalation, or they're just dead and nobody is accounting for them. Their bodies haven't been found.
Yeah.
We're talking about hundreds of people. So 72 people in that terms is literally like a quarter of the people that are potentially missing.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, one of the most striking things when they read the names out of every single person, which initially I was like, okay.
Mm.
But I didn't think that I would have any kind of resonance with it. But then...
When you realise how many of them are in the same families.
And the first thing you realise is that almost all the names are...
People of colour.
Yeah. Or non-white names. They're not Anglo-Saxon names. Yeah. There's no Peter Smiths. Correct me if I'm wrong, there might be. But that's the first thing that you think about. But I suppose it's... more important now than ever to humanise not only Grenfell residents, but all dispossessed, marginalised people. But one of the, like, big, you know, I mean, we're going to probably go into all of the kind of...
Yeah, we will definitely come back to it, because this inquiry could take months.
But obviously, it's this perfect, it's this kind of totemic political moment, right? It couldn't be a more... tragically perfect emblem of the last 30, 40 years of policies. This was not a tragedy. There was somebody who said, one of the tributes was saying
this wasn't a tragedy, it was an atrocity.
It wasn't an atrocity. It was an incredibly preventable one, and one that shouldn't have happened, but maybe now that it has, people may realise that the... I mean, it really is one of those things you can just... The more you research about it, the more deliberate it seems. There was nothing accidental about it whatsoever.
No.
It was...
When you hear about the tests that the cladding underwent as well, you realise
like
that they...
Like when it burns...
If it burns sort of horizontally, it doesn't catch fire, and if you burn it vertically, it does catch fire because the centre of the cladding is incredibly flammable.
I mean,
you realise just how much work had to go into like confusing people with regards to the tests that were done on the on the cladding. It's like it's almost as much work as it would have been to just fucking clad it safely. It's
insane. What's the company called, SpaceX or something?
That's Elon Musk.
Maybe it was him.
It was an American company that made the filling for the cladding. Yeah. I think a British company that made the cladding itself.
So one of those companies, I'm so bad at remembering names and things, but Sajid Satjav's, who was at the time the housing officer, presiding over that area, and his one of his advisors, chief advisors at the time, was the CEO of the company who made the either the cladding, or I'm really gonna have to fact check because I didn't make enough notes.
But there are loads of
little things like that. People, CEOs of these companies. So a huge policy drive of the last, since the 80s, has been the deregulation of the public sector housing. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has meant outsourcing of aspects of buildings management. So companies can bid on who's going to do the windows, who's going to do the piling, do the,
All government projects, they have to take on so many applications for who can do each job. So this is like, we have to look at this in my job, which I now don't have anymore. So you have to look at all of the different government projects that are going, and they have to accept like 5 bids at least for each potential piece of work that's to be done in the public realm, and then they would be expected to take the lowest costing one, unless they were given a very compelling reason to not take the lowest cost. So obviously they're inclined to take they're obliged to take the lowest costing option.
I mean, you have a marketized housing system. Basically you have it's kind of difficult to start even picking apart Grenfell, because it's so it goes back to the 80s, but Thatcher selling off the council housing, the right to buy.
Yeah, the right to buy thing is a huge
which
thing.
Which reduced public owned housing from 40% to 10% now. And the cuts to austerity cuts to public services, which meant that the fire department, when the fire did happen, was severely, severely understaffed, had to go to Sussex or Surrey to get ladders and things.
It's literally on every, it's like on every fucking level.
Every level. It's a perfect storm. It really, and 10 fire stations have been cut, 27 fire engines, more than 600 firefighters lost since 2010 to austerity cuts. You've got the lack of public funding and the marketisation of public housing, which has meant that every single aspect of public housing is surveilled over by a different private company who exists to make profit. I don't think you can say that enough, that these companies who are presiding over the welfare, the housing, the right to live of usually poor people,
and the fact
they
well,
exist to make money.
I mean, and the fact as well that so many concerns were repeatedly raised by the residents over and over again about so many
and
issues
they said
to do with maintenance.
There's going to have to be a tragedy before this.
Yeah,
gets
I mean, and it has happened before.
Yeah.
We saw
the Lacknell House fires. They had what I think is interesting about this inquiry, amongst other reasons, is the Lacknell House fires. So that was in Camberwell in 2009. With 6 casualties, and so that inquiry went on for 50 days. And a lot of the problem with these inquiries and the way that they happen is that recommendations are made to the government, and the government can either take those recommendations or go shove them up their ass. And so with the Lacknell House fire inquiry, a lot of recommendations were given to the government that would have prevented Grenfell, but they didn't take any of the recommendations. And so that inquiry went on for 50 days, and I mean, it depends how you look at it. Are they going to go through this inquiry and look at the fact that the government didn't take any of that advice, and is that going to make it, you know, X amount longer? Is it going to be that much longer because of the number of casualties? I just think it's telling that so eight years before this happened, there was already an inquiry. They already figured out what the problems were. It kind of almost seems redundant to go through the same process and the same style of inquiry, which is just the public inquiry, as opposed to it being like an inquest or a criminal charge.
Yeah. Also, this like, time, it's... this time, with regard to the inquiry, the victims were raising concerns about the fact that they felt that the people that were representing them or that were going to be fighting in their corner were not representative of them as a demographic.
Yeah.
And they were saying that the people who were heading or chairing the inquiry were not a diverse enough group of people to represent them. So they petitioned and campaigned for a panel, which Theresa May only agreed to for like one of the phases.
Yeah.
The second phase was
They didn't even get a choice in the style of inquiry that's to take place. So the public inquiry, just all that happens is at the end of it, recommendations are made.
Yeah.
Nobody is held accountable. Yeah. Nobody is arrested.
It will be bullshit. And they make
no problems
as well,
are actually solved. Like, I don't think at the end of this, unless an inquest happens, nobody is actually going to be arrested or charged for the death of at least 72 people.
And they also made the point as well that with the style of the inquiry and the fact that the chair, etc., are not diverse, it's going to affect participation. People are not going to want to be involved.
There are a few people who have not
in the inquiry.
And the anger around it is so real.
Yeah.
It's so, I mean, obviously legitimate, because you can call it like murder. The people whose job it is to provide safe housing failed, and people were burnt alive. And, and in the richest borough in London, one of the wealthiest places in the world, you cannot ignore. I mean, how devastating that is. How supremely unjust it is, and what like a failure of responsibility it is. From
and
the
government. Fucking like piss poor response to it by the council. The fact that like the year on, what is it? 2/3 of the survivors haven't been rehomed.
Yeah, they're still only just being given their their belongings that have been found in their houses.
Despite the fact that they were promised by the Prime Minister and by Satnav that they were going to be rehomed within 3 weeks.
I don't think that we need an inquiry because we all fucking know what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. The inquiry's been done. It happened in 2009.
Yeah.
All of the problems were, you know, presented to the government, then they decided to ignore them. I think it's a waste of government money to essentially have that same inquiry again. What needs to happen is an inquest. Like, somebody needs to be... Like, somebody needs to take, you know, take the responsibility for this.
It also should not be a shock. The literal policies that we have in this government would drive people to death. Like, the fact that there is no ethical framework for these companies, that everything has become... Every part of the public sector is being sold off, that housing has stopped becoming a human right, that most... like Tory MPs or landlords, the private renting sector is extortionate. People are spending over half their monthly wage on rent.
I think the way that the inquiry is taking place is indicative of that, because I don't know if you listened to on day one of the inquiry, after somebody had given a commemoration, out of the blue they started playing footage of the blaze.
And there was
huge uproar, and everyone was really upset. And a lot of people that were survivors or families of survivors were in the room, and there was no warnings given whatsoever.
Yeah,
it just shows that the people that are running this inquiry are completely emotionally detached from what is actually happening. Mm. You know, there's people watching their family die. There's people who have PTSD, and you're just going to play it without thinking that this may affect some people in the room. And now, then going forward, they're going to give trigger warnings that you should have fucking thought about. This is a massive trauma. Thing that has happened to hundreds and hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And to not even care or think about that, to not even occur to you is bizarre.
It's what people warn about every time a part of the NHS is sold off, every time they introduce a new AMO or whatever. Every time this happens, people warn that there is going to be something like this that happens, and everyone denies it.
Yeah.
And they will again. I mean, the sad part of the slightly kind of resigned part of the inquiry is that it is sort of depoliticized. They may talk about the intricacies of the cladding or the science of it, but they won't talk about
the underlying
the policies that went into creating such an unsafe environment in one of the the richest borough in London.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Chelsea and Kensington has some obscene amounts of wealth if you've ever even been.
Yeah.
It's a kind of absurd that Grenfell even still existed. Yeah. They hadn't tried to drive them out in any other way.
Apparently they even tried to treat the people that lived in Grenfell as like that they should be lucky that they're being allowed in Kent.
Yeah, I mean, this goes into like the way that the media treat people in social housing,
yeah.
And the way that they're demonised and looked at as benefits groundsers.
It's why the policies like this can happen, because there is a concurrent narrative running about in the media about how we should treat poor people, social housing. That has been around since for the last 30 years since we were kids, for sure. That there has been a consistent demonisation of the poor, a complete misreading of who has social housing, who's allowed it, how much there is, and who deserves it. And there, basically, fundamentally, there's been a complete dismantling of the social mainstream public opinion that everyone has a right to a house.
Yeah.
I don't think that in this culture we believe that as a society anymore. Theoretically we should believe everyone has a right to food and shelter, but we actually, I think if you talk to a lot of people, you'll realize there is this, that the PR has been successful, that people actually believe now that, you know, you should maybe, well, these kind of insidious neoliberal values that you should have to work for these things that are actually a right, you know. There are Syrian refugees in fucking Grenfell, for fuck's sake. And it isn't just Grenfell, there are blocks like this all across the country, and not a huge amount is being done to change them. The UN has ruled that a lot of these materials,
the UN
were,
can suck it. The UN do jack shit for anybody anyway.
I know. I shouldn't say that.
What if I ever want to get a job at the UN?
Labour actually proposed a housing and planning bill a few years ago that would have meant that landlords would be legally required, legally required to make properties fit for human habitation.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So not anything, you know, no bells and whistles. But that bill was voted down by 72 Tory MPs who are themselves landlords, which is an unusual
scum.
But they, of course, they voted down. And again, it's not like they voted down a grand scheme to redistribute housing or to build social.
You won't have to
it
do
was
shit.
Just to fucking like put,
make it habitable.
Double glaze the windows, paint
even
the wall.
Even just glaze the windows.
Yeah.
I mean, this speaks to a wider thing that we
can
talk
about. Fit to live is the lowest fucking
race. I know. Fit for human habitation. That's the bar. And we can't even reach that bar.
I've lived in a fair few flats that have not been fit for human habitation.
I mean, we could have a whole episode about. We could talk for like a whole episode.
Big ups
or two
everyone that still
housing.
Lives on West Prince's Street. Real life is a bit better than that guy's trust. Move the fuck out of there. Mr. Khan will die soon, but you might too.
Yeah, it's we could talk for
we
a long
talk
time.
For age, but
housing,
I mean,
people
have
lived in some part, especially in London. Me and Apsy.
I am loved in London.
Apsy and I used to live in London, and I especially lived in some fucking shitholes. And you're paying.
My mum would never let me.
No, if you didn't have a tyrant.
If I didn't have a mum to sort that kind of shit out for me.
Well, I didn't, and that's why I ended up living on top of a chicken shop.
With no doorbell,
no phone. Yeah. We just fucking had to see you when we saw you.
Just see you when you were around.
We just need to hang around the chicken shop being
just
like,
see
hello.
She comes out.
Yeah, because
the worst part is you're a vegetarian.
I know. I couldn't even.
And it wasn't even like a good chicken.
Actually, tried the chicken, and it was, so at least that may be a silver lining. And she felt nauseous. She got like,
I got sick.
Wasn't even good chicken.
And I have a high tolerance for like gross food.
I know. Don't we all know that?
But it was like, and the smell of that fucking. It was no chicken, I'll tell you that.
It was fucking dark. I mean, it had literally like.
It was dark.
They probably hadn't paid the electricity bill. They, like, literally in the windows where they had the posters with the prices and the food on, they'd like, sort of, like, say it said like chips, like £2. They'd like scribbled it out in black pen and wrote like 150 or whatever. And there was all these like amendments in Sharpie just because they were like going out of business. I think they've probably gone out of business now, but. Yeah, I mean, the
listener of the week, owner of that chicken shop.
What was it even called?
It was a knockoff of Morley's.
It was like Chorley's.
It was like Mr. Morley's.
Remember Vice? Like put up that map of like knockoff chicken shops.
Yeah, it was on that. It was. I checked. I think I met someone once who knew it too. They're like, is that the one on? It was on Endwell Road.
Yes,
in Broccoli.
The end.
Yes, it was the end. The it was not end. Well. It was end unwell.
We are indeed drifting into the arena of the unwell. That's probably a good quote of the day. Spot.
I mean, we could talk about it for a long time. It is.
We will. I think we'll come back to it as the inquiry continues. Because obviously, at the moment, we are still just on the commemoration stuff, and it is fucking grim.
But you should be fucking mad. We should all be mad as hell.
I mean, this inquiry is potentially going to take, based off of the Lacknell House one, months.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll just check in once a month and kind of.
But if you haven't listened to the podcast, it's very good.
Yeah, it's every day, but it's only like 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, 15-20 minutes.
Yeah.
Each one.
It's really informative.
Yeah.
Would recommend to have a tissue. Don't listen in public.
No.
Yeah.
Listen while you're cooking. Cry over the chicken.
Yes. Well, I guess that brings us on to housekeeping for the day.
Housekeeping.
First of all, next week's show might be a little bit later in the week because your girl's going on holiday.
We're going on a holiday.
We're going on a holiday.
Vacation.
We're going to
How you going to be mad on vacation?
I'll find a way. We're going to Barcelona, so if anybody is going to Primavera,
Barcelona.
I'm not going to actual Primavera.
Hola.
But I will
Hola, mis amores.
No me toques.
Oh, God.
No me moleste.
No me...
Excuse me?
Mm. No me toques means don't touch me. No me moleste means don't molest me.
It means don't disturb me. It means, like, don't bother... It means don't bother me. Okay. Have you just seen that Tig Notaro bit where she's, like, talking about the sign on her hotel door that says no me moleste, which means, like, do not disturb? But she has this whole bit where it's like, do I have to put a sign on my door to
don't be molested?
Well, one year when we were at Primavera, there was, like, a bunch of guys who were, like, being really creepy when we were in, like, the main arena bit, like at night when it was kind of like turned into a bit of a club vibe, and I turned around and I was like, no me toques. And they were like, oh, Espanol. And I was like, no, this didn't work at all. But then the other method that we used, especially me and Emily, were walking home from like a bar one night and kind of found ourselves being like surrounded by groups of guys, and if no me toques wouldn't work, what you have to do is just make really loud vomiting sound. We would just be like, whoa, whoa. And then all the guys that were trying to like rob us, whatever, would just disperse.
Yeah.
Top tips for Barcelona.
Life hack.
Our theme tune is done by Sunshower. You can listen to him on SoundCloud. Our listener of the week is...
Did you just delete? Oh, no, right. Okay.
No, that was the last one. Abby Gunn, who cut my hair this week.
Oh, yeah. What's up, Blair? Your hair looks really blonde because it's sun.
Pleasure, Sean.
Oh, sun-kissed.
You can listen to our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, CastBox, and Thing That Updates via RSS, i.e. most shit. You can rate and review us on iTunes if you review
us. Please give us a review.
We will shout you out. We haven't had a review in ages. If you rate us but don't review us, we cannot see your username, so please do both. Don't forget, there's an exclusive bonus show on patreon.com/threeinthepink. We're on Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud. We've got an email address. It's 3inthepinkpodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch with anything you want to talk about.
About the
fact that Roma bullies me.
Anything. You can get in touch about
if you want to know the best vegan spots in Barcelona, get at me.
Tips. There are lots.
We'll see you on the beach.
Yeah. Mia, Mia is vegan.
Ooh, I'm going to smoke some of the doobies. Ooh, marijuana.
I won't.
Marijuana.
I won't.
I don't fuck with weed.
That's a... In case my mom ever listens.
I'm only class A, baby.
I'm a class A bitch.
It comes from the earth. The earth can't hurt.
Bye.
Bye.